Welcome to the Victims and Villains Podcast. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and on this episode, we are talking about Rocket Man, the brand new Elton John biopic, and I am joined by my lovely bride, who you guys previously heard on our Shazam episode.
Hi, hello.
All right, so we actually don't have any Manhattan's media moments specifically to talk about to open up on the show, and but we did compile a Elton John playlist on Spotify that you guys can
follow. Is it any good?
Oh yeah, it's got all the classics.
Is Tiny Dancer on there?
Tiny Dancer isn't on there.
Oh, okay, it's not a good playlist if Tiny Dancer is not on there.
All right, so we'll have those in the show notes for this episode. You guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/episodes/206 to find that, or you guys can just check our socials for it on Spotify. But you actually took my opening question, which was, what is your favorite Elton John song?
Tiny Dancer.
Why is Tiny Dancer your favorite song?
Well, I think because when I was growing up, my dad listened to a lot of country. And the first Elton John song that I remember listening to was Tiny Dancer by Tim McGraw's cover version of it. And I really liked Tim McGraw's version of it, mostly because he's a good singer and he is attractive. Use my word since I'm talking to my husband. Anyway, and then I was like, this is a really good song. And my dad's like, oh, you should listen to the original. And so he showed me Elton John. So that was a cool kind of bonding moment for me and my dad, kind of exploring Elton John together. I mean, he didn't show me a lot of Elton John because I was like 7, and we all know Elton John is like not kid friendly, but that's a good song.
Yeah, my first like real memory of Elton John was my grandfather was diagnosed with a stroke and really like hurt his motor skills, and so he went to go live with his daughter because it was my mom's stepdad and in Florida. And basically what had happened was he was getting rid of like a lot of like his like CDs, and like he had a lot of Elton John. Mm-hmm. So like I listened to it, and like I had Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, the Best Of, like there's a cover where he's just kind of like standing there like super tough, and like he had the Duets album out, but it was not my cup of tea, you know. Mm. Being in an era of pop music, NSYNC, Britney Spears, mm-hmm. Christina Aguilera, like that was my growing up.
No, that was me too.
And I think it was a lot of our generation, and like Elton John was just kind of like, it's got a, you know, couple good songs. But he had done he did music for The Road to El Dorado.
Mm.
And Nickelodeon had done this like special with him and Nick Cannon, and he had done a lot of his classics. And I remember thinking Crocodile Rock was like the coolest song in the world.
Yeah, he did do Crocodile Rock.
And Crocodile Rock is probably my favorite song.
It's a good song.
Because it's one of my earliest memories of Elton John.
Well, Elton John did the Lion King song too, right? The Can You Feel the Love Tonight song?
He did. He composed a lot of the...
He did a lot of Disney songs, didn't he?
Well, he did a lot of the Lion King songs. It was him and Tim Rice. Mm. Hans Zimmer, who we all know,
we
did.
Know. Hans Zimmer. He does everything.
The Batman soundtrack, the Christopher Nolan Batman mm-hmm. trilogy, he also did Road to El Dorado with him. Mm. And he's also the man behind the Lion King. Mm. So, yeah. Tim Elton John also did the Can You Feel the Love Tonight, obviously. I was curious to see if they were going to have any of the Disney songs in this, and I'm pleasantly surprised by what they did feature in here.
Yeah, I didn't need the Disney songs in that movie.
No. But I think for our generation, like Can You Feel the Love Tonight and like Circle of Life, like those are like iconic songs.
He did the Circle of Life too?
Yeah.
Man.
Elton John's been everywhere. He's seen everything.
Yeah, I guess.
I didn't realize how much of his music like I actually knew and loved until this movie.
That's adorable. Like, I knew 90% of the music.
I did too, and like I've grown up with. I think it's gonna be kind of like one of like last year when Bohemia came out. Like I knew a lot of Queen's music, mm-hmm. but like I didn't really appreciate it until I saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, so when I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, I was like, oh yeah, that is a Queen song. Oh yeah, that is a Queen song. I wasn't doing that with this one for sure.
Which is funny because when we went to go, we were going up to Philly in this past January, mm-hmm. and we played Bohemian. And I had played you one of Queen's songs, and it was like Killer Queen or something like that. Mm. Like, one of the very first songs, and you were like, this is Queen? Like, Queen has such a diverse sound.
Yeah, they do. This is weird.
But, all right, jumping into Rocket Man. We just walked out of it. What are your general thoughts? Spoiler-free.
Spoiler-free general thoughts. I thought it was a really good, well-rounded fantasy biopic. It is described as a fantasy inspired movie or something. How are they describing it?
Well, the tagline for the movie is something like based on a true fantasy, I think.
Okay, so like you see like in the commercials where like people are floating and like that stuff's all through the movie, and that's kind of like, I think when you're like in like when you're experiencing an event, and like obviously Elton did like drugs, so like when you're in an event and you're experiencing it in like an elevated way, like I think they were trying to express how he experienced life through his eyes, through his experience of being high, being stoned, being drunk, being all of these things. And the whole way through the movie, I think they did a really good job of showing that. I feel like the movie was really emotional. And it might just be me because I'm kind of emotional and I pick up on those things. But like the whole way through the movie, I was like heartbroken for this poor guy because I don't want to spoil it yet, but it's, how do I say it without spoiling it? It's
emotional.
It is emotional. Like I was telling you on the way home, I think as we see people in the media as celebrities, and we forget that they're people who are just living their lives, and they're people in search of love, in search of validation, in search of the normal things that people are in search of. And so it's really easy to like criticize them, and it's really easy to just throw your junk at them. And even when you're in their close circle of friends, it's still easy to, you know, use them as your punching bag. And the whole way through this movie, they just show you he's a real person just searching for love. And it was really kind of nitty gritty and raw. And I really appreciated that about seeing the, you know, the unhinged side of him.
No, I totally agree. And I think that this movie could be my favorite film of the year so far.
But Endgame.
I think this is a better film than Endgame. Like, yeah. Endgame is great in its own respect. Box office. But I think that this film definitely is just utter perfection. I think this is what other biopics strive to be.
For sure.
And reading an article, I was telling you this on the way home, but one critic said that this is basically everything that Bohemian wished it could be.
Yeah.
And, but I think that just there's so much about this film, from the flow of it, the placement mm-hmm. of music, just it's utter perfection. It's so brilliantly shot.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography on this alone, there's like two or three shots of Taron Egerton, who's just looking at himself in the mirror, and he's just kind of disgusted with this person that he's become, and he doesn't really say anything, and we'll talk about that later in the show, but it's such a well-executed movie. We're going to take a quick commercial break. If you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 129 suicides that take place each and every day, and for every successful suicide that exist. There are 25 more that being attempted. When you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides that take place every year. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Text anonymously to 741-741. Please, please, please stay with us. This is the reason that we create the content that we do. It's the reason that we do conventions and a YouTube channel. And just our heartbeat behind Victims and Villains is to, so that you guys can know that there is hope. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Victims and Villains. We are now entering into the atmosphere of spoiler territory for Rocketman. So if you guys have not seen it, please, please hit pause and go check it out. It is a movie that we both highly recommend from our spoiler-free thoughts. But I want to jump into this. This is a musical, first yes. and foremost. And yes. this is... where I felt like other biopics about musicians are so hard to do because it's like, where do you place the music mm-hmm. that made them famous? And I think that one of the strongest strengths of this film is where they place the music.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of almost, where you look at Elton John's career, it doesn't go in order. It goes in order chronologically with the story, but not necessarily the music. The music that it was picked, they definitely went with what Elton John's song best fit that scene. That's one of the strongest things I really enjoyed most about this film.
I have no idea what order any of those songs came out in, so I feel like I have nothing to say on that topic. I'm sorry.
You know, really big songs that are very centric to whatever fits that moment.
Yes.
And I think, too, one of the strongest about this also is the goodbye Yellow Brick Road sequence, where he's kind of leaving this Oz that he's created, this kingdom,
mm-hmm.
in favor of sobriety.
Yeah, like reality. Like, he finally realizes that, like, okay, all of this is great, but I cannot maintain this lifestyle anymore. And it only took him almost dying a couple of times to figure that out.
Well, he had there's a lot of suicidal tendencies that are also woven throughout the course of this, because there's that scene where he throws the big beach party and he tries to kill himself.
Pool party?
The beach party? Or the pool party scene.
Pool party. It's not a beach. I was confused. No, it's not the same thing. Pools and beaches are not the same.
Pool party.
Okay, yes.
And he pumps himself.
But he was pissed off before that. And then he.
A lot of drugs.
Yeah, but he was pissed off and he didn't know what day it was because he's been binging. And then he realized that he's like weeks behind and that he's supposed to have a party. So yeah, that would make me upset if I was weeks behind and realized I was supposed to be throwing a party and feeling like crap. I'd be a little upset. It's understandable, I guess.
I mean, the course of this film, it deals, there's a lot of central themes, I think, woven throughout the course of this film, and his struggle with depression is definitely a big part of that.
Yeah. For sure.
There's a couple of sequences where he's basically like, you just kind of see him, and he is like the mirror scene is a great sequence of that, where he is just looking at himself, kind of this mess that he's made, and it's right before he kind of puts on the glasses and he's just kind of like doing these facial tics to kind of like bring happiness out of it, but you can tell that he's like struggling really with the press. It's right after he has that conversation with his mom and he comes out and he says, you know, hey, I'm a homosexual, and she's like, well, you'll never know real love.
Yeah, that was a crappy move.
But I mean, it's also in that time, you have to think homosexuality and the LGBT community and in the 70s really was a different thing than it is now.
Yeah, I guess.
Because if I remember correctly, in the 70s, a lot of, if you were considered LGBT, like if you consider yourself LGBT, people thought that you had like a mental health disorder.
Mm-hmm. And even into like the 80s, you know, when the AIDS thing, you know, really hit the fan, it was like, that's the gay disease. And so it was still really shamed upon. Even like into the 90s, it was still like not great. I mean, we're 2019 and people still get flack for it, so look how far we've come.
I mean, we've made advances, but there are certain people that are just stuck in tradition and stuck in their ways.
True. I think it was really frustrating, like, from the beginning of the movie, like, the movie opens up on him, like, in his rehab, and he's, like, you know, trying to paint a wonderful picture, and he's like, but no, really, like, my father never showed me an ounce of love since I was a small child. And it, like, flashes back to him when he was a small child, and his father finally comes home from being on tour, or wherever he was, and him as a young child is like, when are you going to hug me? And he had to have been like, what, 8 maybe?
Yeah, sounds about right.
And his father said, don't be soft, be a man. And that cut me to my core, because there's this whole generation of men who grew up, like my dad grew up without a father, and he, you know, the men in his life were like, you know, don't be soft, you know, you got to be a man, you got to do the manly things. Like later in that scene, you know, he's looking at a dress magazine that his mom was looking at, and he was like, don't look at that, you're not a woman. It was like, they had much harsher gender roles, you know, back then, but there was just so much like expectation that because you are male, you cannot show feeling, you have to be cold, you have to be this way. And it's like, that's not healthy for anybody. Like, who told you that? Like, where did this come from? And so it really sucks, because and I'm sure not all people were like that, but there is this gap in a generation where there was no love shown. And even like, I know people our age who had fathers like that, you know, and it sucks. How do you learn how to love yourself and learn how to love others when your own flesh and blood wouldn't show you affection? Like, that messes you up.
Absolutely. And that's definitely something that you see explored throughout the film. Like, it's definitely a big portion of why he starts drinking and why he starts getting into booze, because there's a great one of the great sequences is after he kind of hits it big, he goes back to see his dad. Oh, and his dad is restarted, like, has gotten this, like, moved on, has a new wife, has 2 kids, and like, he's like openly shows like love to his kids, and
yeah, he's hugging his kids are hanging off him, and he's like still get nothing. He's cold, like cold towards Elton, but loving towards his new kids, new family. And he's like, you know, some people don't get second chances, and walks away and is like very upset, and he cries in the car, and I'm like, I'm trying not to cry because this is so frustrating. And it's like, how can you just treat people like that? Like, how can you just not be a decent human being? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and so then it kind of transforms also with his mom as well, to where she's kind of always been this like selfish person. Like, she wasn't really, like, she was there for him, but she was never maybe like emotionally available. Like, she was just kind of there because she had to be.
Right.
And it kind of seemed like the biggest portion person in his life that supported him was his grandmother. Like, his grandmother was the one that took him to the music academy in the beginning. She was the one that really kind of she supported him a lot, and she was the first voice that he heard when he hit the breakthrough point in the group sequence in the very last act. And, you know, if you can just have that one person in your corner that I think that really loves you and shows you what love is, yes, you want love from this person or that person, this person, that person. But when you are raised in an environment that's so heavily negative, you're trained that way very early on to
right.
look at yourself a certain way, to look at yourself this way or that way. And you can, even as he's calling his mom to tell her that he's a homosexual, it's this, it for him to get those words out, it's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it's because he's coming up against the what he's been taught his entire right. life, to what is right and what is wrong.
Right. And I think that it just goes to show that, like I said, you know, he's just a person in search of love. Like, we are all people in search of somebody to love us.
Absolutely.
At our core. That's just being a person, being a human being. And I think that this movie made it, like, just like life lessons you can take from a movie, because for some reason I find those, like, it's okay to cut negative people out of your life, even if they're family. Because, you know, he couldn't live his life with the negative influence of his father. Even when he went back and, you know, his manager was saying, you know, you have to tell your family that you're a homosexual. You have to, you know, make sure that they know how to respond, because interviewers will come to them. And so he tries to do that, and he, like, cannot deal with it. And it's, you know, forgiveness is key. And he does end up forgiving, like, in that last group therapy session. And it's hard. But forgiveness is for you, not them. It's so that you can move on. And I think that's something that you can kind of take from this movie, is that, you know, life is crap sometimes. And sometimes it's because of your own choices, and sometimes it's because of life situations. But if you are able, you know, forgive those people, but that doesn't mean you have to allow them into your life anymore. And that's not because you hate them, but it's because their influence in your life does not lead to good things. And that's okay. And I think that this movie did a really good job of demonstrating that.
Yeah, and the fact that they open up on a Narcotics Anonymous or an Alcoholics Anonymous group setting is really, really sets the tone for what you're going to get into. And sometimes I think we kind of get into negative aspects, whether that is alcoholism, whether that is an addiction to video games or television or social media, because we want that escape, and we want to escape the negativity that is around us.
Right.
And I think that that's definitely what this film does really well, is like the fantasy elements work really well. Mm-hmm. Because you have this guy that has all of this negativity in his life, and his foundation was very, very negative, but then you have all of these people that, you know, you have John Reed, the manager, that started, you know, really to fall in love with him, then he ended up cheating on him.
Well, wasn't really love, it was more narcissism. Yeah,
lust. And you have that, his arc as well, where, you know, you're just kind of seeing all of these people that are entering his life, except for Bernie. For the majority of all mm-hmm. of these people that are entering his life, they want something from him.
Right.
And they want what he can get.
He can give them, yeah.
And I think that just adds to the negative foundation.
Right.
And only fuels the drugs and the sex and the alcohol that much further.
Right.
And it goes back to being able to create communities that you can open up to. And when we had Mike on last week, we had talked about, you know, communities are one of those things that can really create depression, but it can also eliminate depression. And you see that with, you know, his parents were the ones that had basically kind of started this foundation, but it was really Bernie that had kind of started to create a community to where he could feel safe
mm-hmm.
and loved and welcomed.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I loved at the end when Bernie came and visited him in the rehab center, and, you know, he's trying to make amends and he's trying to, you know, apologize, and which he said, you know, earlier in the movie, he said, sorry is the hardest word. So it was really good to see him, you know, making amends. And Bernie's like, you're my brother. Like, it's fine. You don't have to apologize to me. And I think that's, you know, so great that he still has that relationship. And like, they, at the end of the movie, they showed you, you know, all biopics, they show you those facts that are still true. And, you know, they are still friends and they still write songs together and they haven't fought since. Which I guess, I don't know if you would call what they did like a fighting or falling out, but, you know.
I mean, some people, you know, you just need to kind of have those seasons of your life where you step away from one another to mature as people and then kind of come back together. Like, Brandon and I are good examples of that. We had a really strong friendship, and then we had a little bit of spout, so to say, and we kind of stepped back from each other, and now look what, you know, we talk every day. He just called me today, and, you know, it's a stronger friendship because of that hiatus, I think. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's talk about how the fact that you can't have a movie without a star, and Taron Egerton in this movie, this I really liked him as Eggy from the Kingsman movies.
Yes.
And I've really enjoyed him in just about everything I've seen him in, but this is definitely a career defining film for him. I think that after this film, he's going to be hopefully doing a little less action roles and a little bit more dramatic roles, because he kills it as Elton John in this movie.
Yes. Fun fact, he sang all of the songs. That was actually him singing.
Yeah.
So I think that was really awesome. I mean, I don't know what to say. He's just a really good actor. Like, he's really good at just diving in and figuring it out. And he can obviously sing, which is great. And he's not bad on the eyes either, which is great. Sorry, babe.
It's two for two.
I love you.
I love you, too.
You're the one I married, though.
Yeah. It's because you haven't met Taron yet.
I mean, let's be honest. Like, realistically, you're the one for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What about
you're
Pikachu?
You're my Bernie.
What about Pikachu?
Friends for life.
We are friends for life. And, but no, I think that he does a really good job at bringing this in there. And we both know John Campia.
Yes.
And so John Campia, a couple years ago, said that an actor, you can tell, is really good if they can make you feel emotion and have to say no words. And there are several scenes within this where him as Elton doesn't have to say anything. You can literally, like, he can just portray it with his face of brokenness, despair, happiness, joy. It just, whatever emotion the scene called for, that was something that I think he did really, really strong in here.
Yeah, like, when he was, like, slapping his face and, like, doing, he kept cheesing up and he was, like, trying to get into, like, you could tell, like, he's putting on his mask. Like, he's has to fake it for the audience. And, like, I mean, as a not people person, I can relate to that, having to go to work every day.
Now, are you talking about the scene before he was in the baseball getup, or the scene where he's at the mirror and he's like getting ready to put on the glasses?
I think he's putting on the glasses. It was after he got punched.
Oh yeah,
he did it a couple times.
Yeah,
he got punched, and then so he had just told them that he was gay and he was late to the show and he was really upset. So, like, he's so emotionally, like...
That was the glasses one.
I don't know what you're describing. Like, you're not describing the plot, so I don't know what you're talking about.
My brain works differently.
Yeah, obviously. Our brains don't work the same, and sometimes we struggle to communicate, but we figure it out in the end. To preface, he has to tell his mom that he is homosexual, and he does a phone call, and it's heartbreaking because his mom says, "You'll never be loved correctly." And so his heart is broke. Like, the whole way throughout this movie, he just keeps getting his heart broken because he's looking for love in all the wrong places. And because he's trying to get love for from people who won't give it to him. And I think he finally does realize at the end of the movie that he can only take the love that is given to him. He can't earn love. But anyway, so yeah, and then his manager, who he had been sleeping with, but it's like he thought he had a relationship with, but it turns out it was not like serious, and he didn't actually love him. His manager was actually just super narcissistic. You know, he's like, don't test me, you know, obviously I'm in charge, and you're gonna get on stage and you're gonna perform, you have to be out there in 10 minutes. And so like all of that rushing emotion of like anger and brokenness and, you know, despair, and all of these negative emotions are, you know, welling up, and he has to get on stage and put on his happy face and give the people a show. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone big in concert, but like they're always on their A game, you know? Like, you see him, he's in the mirror, he's like slapping his face, he's cheesing, he's like putting on a smile, he's trying to do it, and then he puts on his glasses and he does one big cheese and he goes out and he does his thing because he's Elton John. And he does it. And it works out and it's great. And I mean, it sucks because he can't be himself because he has to perform. And he can't process his emotions, so he's, you know, just shoving it all down. And I mean, I think everybody has lived that way a little bit, you know, having to shove it down, deal with it later. And over the long term, that's not good. I mean, it just erupts on somebody eventually, and the outcome is not good. It's never good.
Well, absolutely, because we're designed to only hold so much in.
Right.
And it's not healthy. Like, if you've ever like been depressed and like didn't want to like go to someone to like talk about the, like, you can only, like, it's this weight that you're slowly hold and hoard up this hill, mm-hmm. until you lose your footing in the hill and you all just come tumbling down. But there's also, I think too, that his journey is more than just trying to find love. I think it's just him wanting to be accepted.
Right.
And that acceptance feeds into the love, and the love into the acceptance, because originally, you know, how he becomes a piano guy is he's trying to get out of the way of his mom's cleaning.
Right.
And so he hears this tune on the radio and he mimics it, and then it kind of develops from there.
Mm-hmm.
And once he kind of gets, you know, he's looking for acceptance as a performer, and then as he kind of goes, as he gets that acceptance as a performer, he is trying to now kind of validate it and get acceptance as a person that he never had really growing up, you know, from his father. And fathers are, I think they hold a big place in the more, I think they hold more value in a child's life than we kind of give value for.
Yeah. For sure.
Because, you know, your moms, you bring one side of parenting, but you also need the father side to also bring that depth to a head as well.
Yeah.
I think just the process and the importance of opening up, and not allowing what other people think of you to be a stigma that holds you back. Because as we kind of see throughout the course, as he's telling his journey from where he started to where he ends up,
right,
the process for that therapy is cleansing to him,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, it's also, that scene after he gets punched and he's putting on his stage gear, as he calls it. He's putting on Elton John, as he puts it, right before a show. I think I looked at that scene and it's one of those scenes that just kind of stayed with me, because it's almost one of those things where you look at kind of how we face depression,
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, make sure that no one knows that we struggle with depression. You're like, all right, I got this. Let me just put on this. Let me just sit here for a second, dwell on it. All right, I'm ready to put my makeup on. I'm ready to go out and face A. And I think that, you know, eventually those masks end up eating us alive, and we need to have those conversations to break away from a stigmatizing feeding into the cultural standard of it's not okay to be depressed, it's not okay to be suicidal, it's not okay to be, you know, addicted. Those things happen because we don't want to talk about depression, and we don't want to talk about what sadness looks like.
Right. And I just loved how the movie ends. I don't think we touched on this part yet, is that the whole time he's like, I thought he was hallucinating at first, but he's having flashbacks. He, at the end, where after he's forgiven his family, he sees, you know, he's trying to identify himself and find himself at the end in the group therapy. And he sees himself as a child again. And he says, I'm Elton John. And everyone's trying to, you know, ask his identity and figure out, like, who are you? Like, you know, who are you really? And he's like, well, I'm Elton John. I know who I am. The manager was asking him. Because he was challenging him, like, you know, you don't know who you are, you know, you can't stand for yourself. And he's like, I'm Elton John, I know exactly who I am. And then his little self was like, I thought you were...
Reginald Dwight,
yes. And it was like this really touching moment where he looks at himself as a child. He's like, I haven't been Reginald Dwight in a really long time. And then Reggie's like, when will you hug me again? And I wanted to cry because he, like, without hesitation, he just leaned down and hugged himself. And it was like he finally learned how to love himself, where he had not known how to do that before. And I think that's just an amazing way that he finally grew into himself. You know, he learned how to love himself. He learned how to love others. And he finally learned what love looked like. And I feel like you can't, when you're struggling with things like depression and suicide and addiction, you can't overcome that kind of stuff without love. And if you don't know how to love yourself and you don't know how to take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to overcome that kind of stuff.
Yeah, love is very foundational in that sense. And we need to have it for ourselves and have that self-respect, or else we're not going to know what love looks like in others. And there's a great quote from the hardcore band Close Your Eyes. How much love will we know to show if we have no love for ourselves? And it's been one of those things that's always kind of stuck with me. And I think that journey does it. It's one of the best shots in this film, just of not only moving, but also at the same time, it's also one of the most heartbreaking and satisfying moments in that shot. Is here you have this guy that's been struggling with depression and acceptance and love and just identity crisis for 2 hours, and probably up to that point in reality has been like maybe 15 to 20 years.
Right.
And here he finally learns how to accept and love himself, and that's a breakthrough. That's when breakthrough and healing begins. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you first have to admit that you have a problem, and he's already done that. But in the process of that as well, in that confession, you also have to know where to love yourself.
Right.
All right. So on the Rorschach rating scale, where would you give this 1 out of 5?
Why do I have to go first? You go first.
I'm going
to
give it a 5. I think this film is utter perfection from start to finish. It is, the music is well placed, the film is well choreographed, it's well shot, it's well acted, it's raw, it's real, it's honest, and it explores amazing themes extraordinarily well.
Cool. My gut was to go 5 out of 5, but I didn't want, I was just pulling that out of my butt, so we're just going to go 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. All right. So if you guys have seen Rocket Man, where does it rank on your Rorschach rating scale? Make sure that you guys let us know wherever you guys listen to podcasts. But that's actually going to do it for us. So you make sure that you guys like, follow, and subscribe to us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you guys get your podcasts from. If you guys like what we stand for, considering supporting us monthly on our Patreon, where you guys can also get access to cool content, and or you guys can also pick up some awesome swag that my wife makes over on Etsy.
Woohoo!
All right, well, until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else, and march on, Tiny Dancer. More than the life that your soul.